meets me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
Now, it has come to my attention that we have to issue a correction to a previous Abandoned Manitoba episode when I was not here. Gordon, remind us what you were talking about last week that issues some fact-checking.
Well, we were talking about first things, things that had happened first, people who did things first. And I asked Bruce what he was first in. And he said he was the first member or first male member of his family that had worked for the CBC. And it turns out that is not true.
What?
Just came to me, actually, a few minutes ago. I'm the third. I'm the second male member, but right. The third member of my immediate family to work at the CBC.
So how are you the second male member?
Well, my sister's been here for a number of decades. And I realized that after I told Gordon, well, I guess that means I'm the first male member of the family to work at the CBC. That's not true either, because for a number of years back in, I believe it was probably the 90s, the CBC employed my dad to... in the evenings to listen to a police scanner and report to the news editor if there was anything going on in the city.
Which I didn't know we did that.
Well, we don't do it anymore because the Winnipeg Police Service changed their whole routine. You can't pick up their communications anymore with a scanner. And B, there's no money for those kind of frivolous things anymore.
I have so many questions about that, but we will say that for another time.
Sure.
Gordon, what are we talking about today?
Well, 2 weeks ago, I had a really enjoyable meeting with a family from California who were here in Winnipeg learning about one of their ancestors who had worked here over a century ago. Their ancestor had become embroiled in a scandal, and as a result, he spent time in Stony Mountain Penitentiary. That person was Thomas Kelly.
Oh my goodness, who was Thomas Kelly?
Well, he was born in Ireland in 1855. His family emigrated to the United States when he was just 9. For whatever reason, we don't know for sure why, but he came to Manitoba in 1881 to join his older brother, Michael, who had come a few years earlier. They formed a construction company called, understandably, Kelly Brothers, and among its early work was Winnipeg's second grain exchange building that's now the facade of the Red River College's downtown campus. But their work wasn't confined to buildings. Last week, I talked about the first Winnipeg streets to be paved with asphalt. The first one was in 1898, and the work was done by the Kelly brothers. One of those paved streets was Kennedy, which passed right by the Legislative Building and Government House. And some people have suspected that the paving of Assiniboine Avenue, the other street paved at that time, was motivated by Thomas Kelly having a mansion on the street. He paved it right past his own home. And they thought, oh, that's pretty suspicious.
So that wasn't the case?
Well, no. Thomas Kelly's home in 1898, when Assiniboine Avenue was paved, was over on Notre Dame Avenue. So its location had nothing at all to do with the selection of Assiniboine as Winnipeg's second asphalted street. This is just one of what I call Kelly myths, where misinformation about Thomas Kelly, which frankly are motivated by the scandals that dogged his later career, led people to see corruption everywhere. It's unfortunate that these myths have colored our collective perception of Kelly's legacy here in Manitoba, as he was involved in constructing many fine early 20th century buildings that still stand today.
Such as?
Well, it's a long, long list, and so I can only really give just a few examples to give you an idea. Kelly was the main contractor for the Land Titles Building on Broadway that faces the Legislative Building. He built the Central Normal School on William. He built the third grain exchange building over on Lombard, not far from the Richardson Building. He built the original Manitoba Agricultural College in Tuxedo, which today is the Asper Jewish campus. He built the Granite Curling Clubhouse next to the Assiniboine River, Laura Secord School in Wolseley, the former Bank of Nova Scotia, which is today's AA Heaps Building on Portage, and perhaps most famously, or infamously perhaps, the Legislative Building on Broadway.
Now, you mentioned the Manitoba Agricultural College. Is that the same as the present-day U of M?
No, not exactly. The original Manitoba Agricultural College site was in Tuxedo, but it was really too small for future growth. So in 1913, it was moved to a spacious new campus on the south side of Winnipeg. And there it would grow into today's University of Manitoba. In 1911, tenders to construct buildings for that new campus were issued, and Thomas Kelly received contracts to put up 5 buildings, all of which still stand. He built Taché Hall, which originally was a student residence. Today, it's a multi-use building. He built the Horticulture and Biology Building, which is today's Human Ecology Building. He built the Chemistry and Physics Building. It was later used for geology and fine art. He built the Original Engineering Building, and he built the Dairy Science Building. But 3 years after the college opened, serious allegations were made against Thomas Kelly.
What were those allegations?
Well, turns out there was little or no financial oversight of the construction project at the U of M. The roof of Taché Hall, for example, was originally to be made of wood. But, you know, I think they kind of realized that maybe wasn't the safest thing. So at the last minute, they changed it to a fireproof material. But, of course, that cost more. And usually such an extra cost would go to a competitive tendering process to make sure they get the best possible price, but it didn't. Thomas Kelly was merely told by the architect, you go ahead and we'll pay you whatever the cost. So there was a little bit of concern about how the costs could spiral as a result. Kelly was also accused of having significantly overbilled the government for the 5 buildings he built. You know, for example, there was a record of a painting job that cost Kelly $1,100. He then turned around and billed the government for that same painting job for $2,200. In other words, he made a 100% profit for having done nothing. What made this overbilling worse was that contractors receiving this extra money were expected to contribute a portion back to the provincial government's re-election campaign. So it was pretty dubious, you know, the whole thing. There was money back and forth, and nobody really knew how it all went.
How did these problems come to light?
Well, it wasn't initially the result of, you know, some suspicions about the university buildings. It actually came about because of an earlier concern, but I'll come back to that in a few moments. In 1917, the government appointed a royal commission to investigate just how much the government had overpaid in building the Manitoba Agricultural College. The architect had originally estimated the total cost at just a little bit under $1 million, which doesn't sound like a lot today, but of course, we're talking about over 100 years ago. When the college was completed, the total cost was found to be nearly quadruple that, about $3.9 million. That's pretty serious inflation. The Royal Commission laid blame in several areas, but Thomas Kelly appears to have taken the brunt of the blame. You know, but as I see it, government officials were also complicit because, well, they skimmed some of the cream into their party coffers, as I said. And worse, 3 provincial cabinet ministers were identified as having benefited personally from the whole affair. What basically they'd done is they had used inside information about the government's plan to buy land for that new college. They bought land around the site on the assumption that eventually it would become very valuable. And of course, it did. Yet, despite all this evidence of wrongdoing by the architect, the cabinet ministers, well, and Thomas Kelly, those provincial government people suffered no consequences other than perhaps their personal reputation took a bit of a hit. The dominant narrative was that Thomas Kelly was the epicenter of corruption, so the politicians, the civil servants, well, they were happy to let him take the fall.
Now, wasn't there another scandal related to the construction of the legislative building?
Right, exactly so. And that's what, say, motivated this Royal Commission about the university buildings. Yes, because, and the basics of it are very similar to those of the Manitoba Agricultural College scandal. Construction of the legislative building had started in 1913, and like the Agricultural College, its costs quickly escalated from the original estimates. By 1915, there were again allegations that the contractors, well, they were being dramatically overpaid. And ironically, the workers, the people who actually did the work, they had to take a 10% pay cut. So the owners were getting rich, the workers were not, and that was seen as basically unfair. Members of the civil service, who were supposed to represent the interests of the government, well, it seemed that they were supporting some of the misdeeds of the ruling political party. And in fact, a royal commission was appointed, and in 1915, it largely substantiated those allegations of wrongdoing. In fact, in the aftermath, Premier Rodmond Roblin, the grandfather, by the way, of later Premier Duff Roblin. Rodmond Roblin resigned and his government fell in a general election that year. It was a huge scandal, but it's arguable that the fall of the government actually had positive consequences because the replacement government, the one of Tobias Norris, introduced all kinds of progressive legislation. They gave the vote to women. They introduced workers' compensation, and they created a commission to rid the civil service of political patronage and corruption. So the kinds of dirty dealings that were quite common in the early 20th century, as we move through the 20th century, basically were gotten rid of. But there is still the matter of some long-standing Kelly myths in all of this.
What Kelly myths were those?
Well, one, and you hear it a lot, in fact, I heard it 2 weeks ago when the family was touring, is that perhaps some of the stone columns that stood in front of Thomas Kelly's home on Carlton Street were actually stolen from the legislative building project. You know, he just decided, oh, I'm going to use those columns. They're part of the building, but I'm going to take them for my house. Well, this is provably false because his home was completed in 1908, and that was 5 years before the beginning of the legislative building, so it just made no sense that he could steal from a project that didn't even exist. The other myths relate to what happened to Thomas Kelly after the scandal. He was arrested, he was tried, he was convicted, and he was sent to Stony Mountain Penitentiary to spend 2.5 years. Well, it didn't quite turn out that way. In fact, he ended up being released a little bit early. But it was widely reported that as he lived at Stony Mountain, he was living in the warden's house, you know, in relative luxury compared to the other prisoners. He had a private chef to make his meals. And what I think is most ridiculous, he hosted poker games with his friends on Saturday night. They all came out to the penitentiary for a game of, you know, poker. None of these statements have been proven to be true. And it's just, you know, I think the reality is, like any good rumor, they confirm our suspicions about the misdeeds of powerful people. So they must be true, right?
So what ultimately happened to Thomas Kelly?
Well, he was released from prison in mid-1917, having served basically about a third of his sentence. And the reason he was released is that he apparently was in quite ill health. But he rallied and he returned to his sumptuous mansion on Carlton Street. And he lived there until he moved to the United States in 1924. He eventually ended up in California, and there he made another fortune in oil exploration. He died in 1939 and was buried in Los Angeles. But meanwhile, back here in Winnipeg, his house on Carlton Street remained standing until 1965, after it had served as a boarding house, a restaurant, and an event venue. After the house was demolished, and it is gone today, 7 of those stone columns, the ones that had been allegedly stolen from the legislative buildings, well, they were used to frame the entrance to a 10-story apartment block called the Kelly House Apartments that now stands on the site. So anybody who wants to cruise down Carlton, you'll see these 7 columns, and they are from that Kelly House, and supposedly they were stolen from the legislative building. And, you know, so they're just one more visual reminder of the impressive legacy that Thomas Kelly left here in Manitoba.
Thanks for this, Gordon. What's up for next week?
Well, the public scandals over the construction of the legislative building and the University of Manitoba reminded me of another case at the university in which the equivalent of some $42 million in today's money were embezzled by a respective local lawyer. So next week, we're going to discuss the McRae scandal of 1932.
I'm loving all these scandals. Thanks, Gordon.
See you next week. Bye-bye for now.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba. Many moons.